his method. No. Oh.
I go.
How do you?
You're on.
That is off.
Wait for me.
I'm all slow. Happy Teacher Appreciation.
Oh, let me tell you, I've been appreciated this Monday and Tuesday.
Hey.
Yep. And I ran up to the elementary teachers and I was like, hey, I see you. I went into a classroom and I told them, what do you think it is? And they're like, no, it's Teacher Appreciation. Yeah. And they were like, thank you so much.
I got a bunch of Snickers bars. I'm like, I'm trying to.
Oh, dangerous. Yep. They try to give me candy today.
Stop appreciating me so much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did I tell you I'm going to middle school next year?
Hey.
I'm going to middle school.
Hey there.
Oh, I get that.
We're close quarters today.
That's what they want. They want us to be able to, like, duke it out.
I don't know about the duke it out part, but.
I got to do my.
Is that a new wireless?
It is.
Sweet, huh?
I don't know.
Yeah.
So that is
oh new
now it's on yeah if you
red is
no
on.
No light is mute okay let's bring the city council workshop for May 6, 2025 to order. I do want to inform the public of our disclaimer stating that the city of Bonnie Lake uses machine assisted live closed captioning. As such, we are unable to guarantee the accuracy, reliability, or performance of this service, nor the limitations provided by this service. Please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Back to being my
age. Clerk, would you call the roll, please?
Mayor Carter.
Here.
Deputy Mayor Swatman.
Present.
Councilmember Baldwin.
Also present.
Councilmember Davis.
Present.
Councilmember Fullerton.
Here.
Councilmember Hubler.
Here.
Councilmember McClymans.
Present.
And Councilmember Rock.
She's not here.
And motion to excuse Councilmember Rock from today's council workshop.
We should.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor of excusing Councilmember Rock, say aye.
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 Opposed? Very good.
She's out of the country. So
she is. Yes, she is. It would be difficult. It could be midnight or 2 a.m.
Right.
Where she's at. Okay, we do have two proclamations. This is really loud. I'll read those. This is the 56th annual Professional Municipal Clerks Week. Whereas the Office of the Professional Municipal Clerk, a time-honored and vital part of local government, exists throughout the world, and whereas the Office of the Professional Municipal Clerk is the oldest among public servants, and whereas the Office of the Professional Municipal Clerk provides the professional link between the citizens, the local governing bodies, and agencies of government at other levels, and whereas professional municipal clerks have pledged to be ever mindful of their neutrality and impartiality, rendering equal service to all, whereas the professional municipal clerk serves as the information center on functions of local government and community, Whereas professional municipal clerks continually strive to improve the administration of the affairs of the Office of the Professional Municipal Clerk through participation in education programs, seminars, workshops, and the annual meetings of their state, provincial, county, and international professional organizations. Whereas it is most appropriate that we recognize the accomplishments of the Office of the Professional Municipal Clerk. Now, therefore, I, Terry Carter, Mayor of the City of Bonny Lake, do recognize the week of May 4th through 10th, 2025 as Professional Municipal Clerks Week, and further extend appreciation to our professional municipal clerks and to all professional municipal clerks for the vital services they perform and their exemplary dedication to the communities they represent. So, thank you. All right, I have one more proclamation here. This is Drinking Water Week, May 4th through 10th, 2025. Whereas water is our most valuable natural resource, and whereas drinking water serves a vital role in daily life, serving an essential purpose to health, hydration, and hygiene needs for the quality of life our citizens enjoy, and whereas tap water delivers public health protection, fire protection, support for our economy, and the quality of life we enjoy, and whereas the hard work performed by the entire water sector, designing capital projects, operators ensuring the safety and quality of drinking water, or a member of our pipe crew maintaining the infrastructure communities rely on to transport high quality drinking water from its source to consumers' taps, and whereas the coronavirus pandemic has shown a light on the importance of drinking water for health, hydration, and hygiene needs, and whereas we are all stewards of the water infrastructure upon which future generations depend, and whereas the citizens of our city are called upon to help protect our source waters from pollution, practice water conservation, and get involved with their water by familiarizing themselves with it. Now, therefore, I, Terry Carter, Mayor of the City of Bonny Lake, do proclaim the week of May 4th through 10th, 2025 as Drinking Water Week. All right. Thank you. Now on to council open discussion.
I have something.
Councilmember Fullerton.
Yeah. So, at the CDC, we have been discussing the new law that's going to go into effect on July 1st. It's HB 1337. And on our packet this week, it's for ADUs. And so the state has said that cities need to allow for any property that has a single home that they can add two ADUs to the property. And this is what they think is going to create less homelessness by allowing people to rent out their ADUs and build two instead of one. And they've kind of lowered the size of the property laws and things like that. We have the ability before July 1st to make certain regulations that can help kind of discourage people from building two ADUs on their property. So there have been a few changes made to city code that we're working on. And so what we're asking from the CDC is that all of the council members go into our CDC agenda packet from today and read through the changes that are being made, because this is actually going to come to council, but we have to start making decisions very quickly because we only have until July 1st. And then with AWC and canceled meetings, we have a limited amount of time before we can make changes to Bonny Lake Municipal Code. But we also want to keep in mind that these changes need to be need to honor property rights as well as. So we're not saying like you can't build something, but we do want to like make changes saying like if you're going to build a piece of, you know, an ADU, then you need to pay for separate water and sewer meters to go to that particular ADU. And they've also made it so that you can condominiumize, which is a new word for me, where, so say that you have a single house and then you have a kitchen and a dwelling unit in the basement, and then you also have a kitchen and bathroom and everything on the upstairs level. So you're using part of that as a mother-in-law house or dwelling. But then you decide, oh, I want to condominiumize, so I want to sell the bottom half of my house so that I can make some money. So we would make it so that in order before you can sell that, you're going to have to hook that up to a separate water and sewer line. Because you need to be able to bill those separately. Otherwise, the person on top, if you sold both units, then the person in the main dwelling unit would be charged for that other person's water. And if that person wasn't paying their half of the water, then all of the water could be shut down to all the units. So so we're just trying to make it so that everybody has to hook up to water, sewer, meters, and that's just one of our kind of stipulations that we can do, because we can't necessarily say no, you can't do this. And then the other part was, there was the question of whether we should allow short-term rentals like Airbnb. So do we want all of these ADUs that are getting built to be able to do Airbnb, or do we want to make a regulation saying no, any rental has to be 30 days or longer? There's just all kinds of questions that we're trying to get worked out. Let's see, gross floor plan. And yeah, there's new regulations on how big the units can and can't be, and that is on page 20. Is that correct, Jason? And so we have a bunch of crossed out areas, which are the old Bonnie Lake Municipal Code, or what is currently the code, and then we have the new Bonnie Lake Code that we're trying to write. It's page 21 for the sizes. And this is based off of the state versus what Bonnie Lake can do. And then anything that's underlined is the new regulations that we have written. So we're just working through this process, and it would be wonderful if we could get full council discussion. We are going to bring this to a full council discussion on June 10th, and then if we need more time to talk about it, then we'll bring it to the workshop on June 17th. The Planning Commission is going to be looking at this on May 14th, and then the CDC will visit this again on May 20th. So if you go through this and you have any concerns as to the changes that were made, then you can email the CDC about that, I guess. Would that, or do we want to email Jason? What do you think? Jason, should we be emailing you, or do they?
I would, to prevent accidentally having a serial meeting, I would recommend emailing staff, either Lauren or myself, and then we can convey those comments at a CDC meeting along with any, you know, response, or include them in the packet so they would be included. But I would think to avoid that serial meeting, it'd be better to email staff directly.
Perfect. So that's what we'll have you do, is just email Jason or Lauren with any concerns that you have. We did start kind of questioning our thoughts on the short-term rental, so that your thoughts on that would be greatly appreciated, because I feel like telling people that they can't have an Airbnb, if they've already gone through the process of, you know, building their two ADUs and say they live on Lake Taps, like inner Inlet Island is part of Bonnie Lake. So if they've paid the water meters and they've gone through all the process and the permits to build them, then, you know, do we really want to say, oh no, by the way, you can't rent it out when everybody's taxes are going to be going up. And I'm sure people are going to be looking for other ways to have more income. So is that something that we want to regulate, or should we just be like, we can be silent on it, or we can put certain recommendations or regulations to the short-term rentals, but, you know, do we want government overreach on what people can do with their property? So that was kind of one of the questions, because originally we had it put in that they can't have a short-term rental, and then we had another discussion today and kind of changed our mind a little bit on that thought. Yeah.
I think he raised
Councilmember McClanans.
Yeah, so to be perfect.
Yeah, it's on
there. Yeah, okay, great.
Red is on.
So to be perfectly clear about this, some of this discussion that we've had, please look at this packet. But in my mind, I think my concern about this is that we as a city council have been put in the position of we have to make bad law to prevent worse law from affecting our citizens. And the problem with the worse law is there's an implicit, it's interesting because it was brought up this evening, that there's an implicit gift of additional property rights of being able to build another ADU on your property. Whoa, sounds great. I can have two ADUs on my property now where I couldn't have that before. That's what it looks like. But hidden in that, which is what the state lawmakers are really good at, hidden in that is also the condominiumization of these things, which I think is going to drive a profit center. It's going to create an industry for developers the situation will kind of go like this. Hi, I'm with Johnson Builders. I'm here, and I just want you to know that I have a few mobile structures that are compliant that I can drop on your property, and then you can sell them for $40,000 a piece. So you can have a windfall profit of, like $30,000 a piece for those shelters, right? Are you interested? Because they can sell them as a condominium. So now, hey, who wouldn't be interested in making money like that? And what developer isn't like interested in going, oh, I've got a cookie cutter way to go into a lot of the big lots and convince these people to subdivide, right? So the challenge is you've given them an implicit right with adding yet another ADU, but now you're also providing a vehicle for an industrialization and this ADU and condominiumization that can deteriorate the implicit contract of a single family neighborhood. So that's my concern. So now what's the law going to do, right? I mean, what's a good law, you know, for me, because property rights are so crucial and they're paramount, public safety and property rights are what drive me to serve on city council. So this law drives me to violate property rights because I want to restrict the ability, because I believe there's an implicit contract in place with a lot of the people that live in Bonnie Lake with they expect a certain amount of single family privacy in single family neighborhoods, but yet we're going to have a motivation for people to put multiple small units on their property, and we're going to create an economic incentive for, I think, for contractors to try to sell that, right? And I only say that because as a member of an HOA that has participated in protecting the properties from subdividing over and over again, I know that there are developers out there that look for these opportunities, and they're very good at, hey, right, I just bought your neighbor's house. If I buy your house, I can create four lots instead of two. Right? Sell me your house, I'll pay your fair market value, right? And, you know, those sorts of things happen all the time, I think. And I think this is just a way it's a threat vector for that. So that Jason and Lauren have done an outstanding job of trying to say, this is how we can make it still possible, but make it so that there are some reasonable gates to go through so that it's not just an economic incentive. So it's really hard for me. This is like so, so hard for me. So that's all I have.
Councilor Baldwin.
I would even add on to that in the fact that we, a lot of us are familiar with out-of-country buyers, and when they, you know, if a single family moves out of a home and then an out-of-country buyer decides that they want to buy, you know, some of these single family homes in our community, what would stop them if rental business is their thought process to, you know, turn these into condominiums? And so, yeah, I could see that as definitely being an issue, and I agree with you. It would change the fabric of the people who actually live here rather than maybe people who profit, you know, from buying and converting single-family homes. My question also, so thank you for bringing this to our attention. I think the other thing, too, is when you use the word condominiumize, I think I said it right.
Condominiumize.
I'm thinking of just even the contracts and the sale of a home in the end and things like that. I'm just curious if you all know, or even Jennifer knows, what the legalities are of turning a single family home into a condo and then you attempt to sell it.
They have the ability to now with the new state law. They can go to Pierce County. So that would actually be out of the city's control. Mm-hmm. So they would go to Pierce County and they would file for a permit to condominiumize
their good enunciation.
And then the city actually can't do anything because we don't deal with condominiums. That would be through this Pierce County, and I think Jason's got his hand up, so
he does. Mr. Sullivan, do you want to try and answer that?
Yeah, I'll kick it to Jennifer in just a second, but that was one of the primary changes in this new state law. It specifically said that somebody could, we could not prevent somebody from building an ADU, whether detached or attached, and then condominiumizing the property and selling the individual units as separate real estate interests. So it, under the new state law, if you had a house and you had two attached ADUs to that house, so you divided it up some way so you have the primary residence and two attached ADUs, under the new state law, you can actually condominiumize the house and the two ADUs. So it's one structure but three real estate interests that you could sell to three separate people. And with that, I'll kick it over to Jennifer.
And Councilmember Huebler has her hand up.
Yeah, I see that. I'm waiting for
the... Thanks. So I'll just add on to what Jason said. He's correct. And also, under the State Condo Act, if you can't regulate something differently based on ownership. So if, for example, zoning that you had in the city allows an apartment building on a single piece of property, you can't regulate that differently and put new codes on it if it's owned as condos versus owned as apartments. So what this does, the new state law, is extends it to lower density residential. I think it was the law anyway, but it makes it clear that if the people that don't read the State Condo Act, that it also applies to single family ADUs in cities that are subject to the middle housing requirements where they have to allow duplexes, or sixplexes, etc. Same thing. So whether the ownership is not something that cities can regulate as far as the ownership type, whether it's apartments, you know, separate fee simple ownership or condos.
Okay. Councilmember Huebler, I know, has had her hand up.
So question on the ADUs, Councilmember McClymans, when you were talking about them being able to build them on properties, even though like HOAs still in control of our developments with that, or does this supersede what HOAs have in place already? It's like if your HOA says no ADUs on a property, does that still go, or can they now all of a sudden bring ADUs onto their property?
So
Councilmember Fullerton.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
Thank you. The state has preempted that for the future, HOAs cannot put a restriction on ADUs. But if you have a ADU restriction on a current HOA, then your HOA is grandfathered in. But for the future, new HOAs that are just forming cannot have that in their contract. Jason's got his hand up.
Yeah, and Jason or Mr. Sullivan, can you you wanted to expand on that? I'm guessing.
Yeah, I just wanted to expand a little bit. The way the state law was written was if HOA currently had a provision that would abandon ADU, that provision is still valid. They didn't preempt that. But any existing or future HOA that does not have that preemption on the date the state law passed, they can't go back and added it. The state law preempted it. So say an HOA has been in existence for 50 years, but they didn't have a prohibition on ADUs, then they could not go back and add that after this law was passed. So what was in their law, their covenants, the day the law passed is what can remain. However, the only thing I mainly wanted to point out is we're not the enforcement agent for an ADU, we're not the enforcement agent for HOAs. So even if an HOA says you can't build an ADU and someone were to come to the city and apply for one, we would issue the permits. It would be then beholden on the HOA to take that individual to court as a civil matter, because we're not the enforcement agent for the HOAs. And that's case law. So we can't enforce HOA bylaws or HOA covenants. That is doing private business through the government. So anything HOA, so you can't have a shed, we would still give you a shed. That would have to be a lawsuit between the HOA and the property owner at that point.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilmember Davis.
So I think, Mr. Sullivan, last time we talked, you did say also in the state law that they had no minimum lot size requirement. Is that something that we're looking or that we can possibly add in? Or lot size requirement to add these two ADU structures?
We looked into that at the committee level and discussed that at the committee level. The challenge is if we establish a minimum lot size, we can't just establish it for ADUs. We'd have to establish it for every single family lot. So we would basically be taking away the flexibility that we currently grant property owners, that when they go to subdivide their property, whether it's, you know, a lot of lots or it's just, you know, someone wanting to split their house, their lot into two so they can sell one to their kids to build a house. We don't require a minimum lot size. We do everything on density. So we would be if we were to establish a minimum lot size, it would have to apply to every single lot. That would also create some challenges with people who have non-conforming lots, because if we say establish the minimum lot size at 8,600 square feet, which is what 5 units per net acre works out to be, people who have less than 8,500 square foot lots, when we would get zoning verification letters from their banks, would have to note that their lots are non-conforming, which can create problems. And so we chose not to include that in this proposed legislation for those reasons.
Deputy Mayor Swatman, I think you had something.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. I would just like to touch on one thing that I heard there a little bit, because to address Councilmember Baldwin's question or statement about the ownership and concern about that, I think that there would be a way to that could be guarded or somehow, because while clearly the condominization of a property is now state law, you know, it can be used, you simply couldn't have Megacorp come in and buy, you know, today they could, of course, own 500 condos in Bonnie Lake, but you know, Megacorp is a business doing business in the city of Bonnie Lake as a corporate entity, and you can tell Megacorp that they can't own more than 2 units, right? Mm. So, you know, there's a hole there.
Mm-hmm. Councilmember McClymans.
Yeah, so I just was curious because I heard legal counsel say that she believed that condominiumization was already the law and that the legislature just formalized it. Is that... what you said. I just want to make sure I understood that statement.
Yeah, that's what I said. I looked at this a few years ago before middle housing took effect. It wasn't in the Growth Management Act, but it was in the State Condo Act. So not all cities recognize that, but especially when it comes to ADUs. And so it was clarified in the middle housing law. But I have advised my clients not to regulate condos, based on the State Condo Act in the past.
Thank you.
Councilor Baldwin.
I will say in the short-term rental thing that you had brought up, in Hawaii, when we were living in Hawaii, and then after we had moved away from there, they had actually changed some of their laws as well because they were having issues with rentals for that reason, short-term rentals, and had changed it so that, you know, certain agreements needed to be 30 days or longer. So they had actually put something in effect very similar. Because there was a huge issue with transient populations, and those transient populations started to really affect the kind of the core of Hawaii and Hawaiian culture there. So something to think about, you know, because we know that our community does have a specific fabric and that there is a reason why people move here. And so, yeah, again, thank you for bringing all of that up. Yeah.
Any other discussions? Councilor Baldwin.
Did you want to go first?
No.
Are you sure? Okay. All right. I have two things that I just wanted to kind of put back on everybody's radar. So it sounds like at the May 20th meeting, our retail theft code is going to be coming to council. And so wanted to just reiterate, I don't know if you guys have had a chance to look it over and things like that, but there is, I have read through everything. It's really well written, actually, but there's no expectation for businesses to take any kind of action other than allowing all employees to be able to alert the police or call the police when active crime is occurring, and reasons are stated why that expectation is being put into place. And so I think the next step in conversations, I just talked with Chuck, and with Chief, and I'm reached out to Leslie as well in trying to get some sort of way to reach out to the businesses in the community, whether it's through our contact list that we already have with all of the active policing that's been going on in our community, or maybe even with the chamber, just to give businesses a heads up and an opportunity to say thoughts that they might have. And so I guess my next question then becomes, we have this draft. I don't know what the legality is behind it either. So Jennifer, this may be a question for you as well, but is there a way for us to be able to communicate with businesses to let them know, or maybe even show this to them, to get this in front of them so that they can just be aware of it and know what is coming down the pipeline? For that?
So if I may answer that. So there's a couple of different ways that can happen. And one is that you do the outreach ahead of updating the code. And the code has a lot more to it, including standards we have to change by the end of the year under state law. But you can do outreach to businesses saying, hey, Bonnie Lake is considering changing its business licensing code. Come on down. You could set a special hearing. Not required, but you could. Or you could pass, assuming that council agrees, you could pass it and you could direct staff, you could set the effective date, say, for the end of the year, and you could direct staff to start doing outreach to businesses, informing them about the new business licensing code, answering questions. You could even have a period of non-enforcement of some of the new things with regard to retail theft. You could have a 90-day, 180-day rollout period where if you find an issue, they get a courtesy notice saying, hi, you might not be aware that state law has changed and, city code has changed and, this is now not allowed and it could put your license at risk. Please be aware going forward, we expect you to comply. There's a whole bunch of different ways you can do it, but I absolutely think there should be outreach either before or after or both the rollout of the new licensing code update.
Councilmember Baldwin.
So in regards to the outreach, because I don't know, Council, what your thoughts are. I certainly don't think we should wait until the end to end of the year to pass it. But I do like some of the ideas that were proposed. But I guess my question then is, in alerting or giving a heads up to the businesses, are we able to send them, you know, the rough draft copy to get their of the ordinance itself, to get their feedback or their thoughts, or just giving them an opportunity to be able to look at it? Is that something that is legal to do?
So certainly, but what I would recommend is that you have council take a look at it first, because if it's not something council's generally supportive of, you don't want to put people on notice if the licensing code is not, if some of the changes are not something council wants to pursue.
Mm-hmm.
So my recommendation is you at least have a study session on it, see if it's something council is ready to green light outreach on. And then the city could, I don't know how we keep our business licensing information, but if we have emails for most businesses with licenses in Bonnie Lake, we could certainly send them all emails saying, you know, the city is studying a new license code. Here's a link to where you might look at it. We could put a put a web page online about business licensing update coming soon to Bonnie Lake. But I would recommend before you do outreach, make sure that the council is on board, though. And I saw Jason put his hand up.
Yeah, Mr. Sullivan, so you probably want to address this.
I'd have to check to see how what we have for business license email addresses. We don't do our own business licensing. We do it through the state, and we just approve a Bonnie Lake endorsement. So I don't know what information we can quickly gather from the state database for business license, whether or not that's, I just don't know if that's a field that they collect or have, or if we, or if when we do a download from the Bonnie Lake endorsement, that's a field that comes out. So if we didn't want to, if the council did want to do that way, I'd have to confirm with our business license staff and the permit center who does the endorsement, whether or not what we can pull from the state website.
I'm guessing the CSOs probably have contact information.
They do.
Most of the businesses.
Yeah, the CSOs may have contact from a lot of the businesses. I don't know if they have contact from everyone. Yeah, I was just going from what, you know, Jennifer was mentioning, the business license list, and I just want to make sure. We probably could. I just want to throw it out there as a caveat that we have not done that before. So just want to throw it out as a caveat. We need to look in to see if that's the data that we can download from the state website. I believe we can, but I just want to verify it before I can say it's something we can or can't do.
Councilmember Hubler.
Just out of curiosity, has anybody reached out to anybody in the city of Issaquah to see how this is working for them? My reason for asking is one of my customers down at the shop is an Issaquah police officer, and I asked him how he feels as an officer that code is going for them. And he was telling me that the store policy supersedes whatever the city's code is, so they can only enforce what they can enforce, and some of the stores still don't cooperate fully as the way it's written. So I just want to, like, is it working for, you know, Issaquah the way we're hoping it works for us, or not?
Yeah, let me.
Councilor Fullerton, I think your hand was up.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah, I've read through some of Issaquah's like ordinance, and it's not the same. What we're saying for businesses is different.
Yes, in some levels, but they're just what I'm being told is we can't supersede what a store policy is.
Your officer's incorrect.
Yeah. Law or an ordinance is above whatever their policy is. Yeah. Councilor Fullerton.
Yeah, so I'm just wondering, is this going to come to a council agenda, like for full council soon?
Yeah, it's on May 20th. Do we know if that's... Yeah, it's a workshop. Mm-hmm.
Now, I will throw out the policy deal, right, is they can have their policy and they can fire people for violating their policy, whether that goes along with your city ordinance or not. So it's important to understand both sides. Is that it for that one? Oh, Councilor Walden?
Yeah, sorry, Jennifer, you had also mentioned in the ordinance that other than what I had said in a nutshell, there were other things in there. Could you elaborate further on what you mean by that?
Oh, okay, I don't have it in front of me. There's, in addition to what the council directed, for example, there's under state law, and Jason might have this at his fingertips, you could either, for businesses that earn less than, I think it was $2,000 or $2,500 a year, local businesses or ones that are not in Bonnie Lake, but doing business in Bonnie Lake, cities under state law have the authority to either exempt them altogether from business licensing or require them to have a business license, but you couldn't charge for it. Well, the amount that they can earn has now gone up to $4,000, and it's going to be indexed to inflation going forward. So that's one of the things we have to change by the end of the year. That's the main thing we need to change. Jason, did you have that off the top of your... If you give me a couple of shakes, I can pull it up.
I don't have it on my fingertips either. I didn't know it was going to be discussed tonight.
Surprise.
I know there were some changes in state law that were required to adopt, and so for legislative economy, we're bringing those together at the same time. And then also moving our home-based business licensing provisions into the business licensing chapter so that it's easier for people to find. When they go to the business license chapter, they see everything versus having to search for two separate places. So those are the two broad brush changes that I think we're making. I don't think a lot of substantive other than directed by state.
Right. So, and I just pulled this up. Thank you for your patience. So in addition to the revocation or suspension authority for the, not reporting crime or allowing the business to be a place of, illegal drug usage, there's also, you guys, your business licensing code was pretty thin. It didn't have a ton of things I'm used to seeing in other cities. So, for example, you didn't have in your licensing code an appeal if someone gets their license denied, revoked, or suspended. So that has been added to the draft ordinance that Councilmember Baldwin was looking at. If there's fraud conducted, you can you can revoke it or suspend it, etc. We did put the appeals in there. That is the main one. Oh, you know what? I pulled up the wrong one. I pulled up an older version of that. So that, and then what Jason said about the home occupation, and the amount of exemption for up to $4,000. Those are some of the other ones. A lot of these are pretty standard business licensing code provisions. And I'm sorry, if you guys ever know you're going to bring something up, send me a quick email and I'll be completely prepared. I promise.
I
sent the finished ordinance out and then it left my mind.
Yeah, I expect we'll have a robust discussion, was it May 20th, at the workshop? So, Councilmember Baldwin.
So it sounds like then there are going to be multiple changes then to just business licensing revocation in general. And so once the council discusses it, will we be able to send out, a copy of the agenda bill or the ordinance that's maybe just focusing on that part of it? I just don't want to send them a 137 page document and all they need to look at is page 5 or something. Oh, sure. Yeah. With all the legal jargon in it too.
Yeah.
It's fun. Yeah.
It might be good if staff can do it, and that, I can help with it, is to put together an informational piece with a high-level description and bullet points to convey what is being changed. And that can be something that can be put in the council packet. And it can also be something that we create to send out to businesses and members of the public, posted on the website, et cetera.
Wonderful.
That'd be great. Let's do that.
Should you go first? Okay.
You're still going.
Sure. And this is just a heads up to all of you and maybe even people who work for the city. But I've been talking with Jason and Jason Sullivan and Councilmember Swatman in regards to the Veterans Memorial. And so wanting to lift that back up. And so I have been doing some research. I'm also in contact with some individuals that had created the Maple Valley one as well, and just trying to research a little bit more into the success of their project and how they got that off of the ground. And so if anybody is interested, we are looking for veterans or families of veterans that are interested in being a part of the committee or even a sounding board, or have ideas or thoughts or anything like that, very much open to that. I've also asked the mayor to be a part of that, well, because he's a veteran, and then Jason Sullivan as well. And so, but we know that many heads will potentially make a really good project. So just wanted you to know that that's also coming down the pipeline.
Love that. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Councilmember Fullerton.
Yeah. So, Jason, didn't we actually, we were discussing that at CDC and kind of bringing back up a Veterans Memorial Committee, and we had that gentleman, Dave?
Yeah, he sent it to me.
Okay, so, yeah, so then I think we just didn't bring it back up because we got sidetracked with other things, but so Dave is somebody that you've been in discussion
with? I reached out to him. I haven't been in discussion with him yet.
Oh, you haven't? Responded back yet? Or
I do have his information, though, for sure. Yeah.
Okay.
And then if you have other persons as well.
Deputy Mayor Swatman.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. Yeah, thanks to council members for bringing the Veterans Memorial back up and work on that some more. I think the one email that I managed to send to Councilmember Baldwin was, what, in 2000?
It was a while ago, and there's
some of the parties are no longer,
they're deceased,
involved in that, so it's fantastic. No, I just wanted to state that this is the time of year when many of our groups are out there working and doing things in the city, all over the place, community organizations. Ran across several people that are continuously telling me that they talked to the mayor and he's doing a great job. Been really responsive to different requests from the community groups. So I really appreciate the mayor and staff, paying attention to the community needs and trying to see what they can do to work with them. Often enough, the issues are kind of contentious with the community groups trying to use different facilities and such. So, they've been great to work with to get things done, and I really appreciate that. It's nice to see.
Thank you. Yeah, appreciate that. And thank you to staff. Yeah. All right. Any other discussion? All right. We have several things on the agenda here, so we'll move on to review of council minutes. Councilmember Fullerton and Councilmember Huber.
I didn't see anything. Neither did I.
Okay. Very good. Next, we have our first discussion item tonight, an ordinance to prohibit smoking, vaping, tobacco, or cannabis use in or near entrances to city facilities. City Clerk Shanahan, floor is yours.
This got brought up because we didn't have anything in our code about it. And we have had a citizen that liked to do his vaping in the lobby. And so we had a policy for no smoking, and we're updating that. And so we are bringing forward an ordinance to prohibit the tobacco, vaping, cannabis, smoking, all of that on city property. It has to be 25 feet away from all windows and doorways.
All right, Councilmember Fullerton.
Yeah, is cannabis and marijuana the same thing?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
just making sure it's considered the same thing.
Councilmember Davis.
I did have one question in here. I noticed, obviously, so a lot of it was smoking products. There is one section here that talks about chewing tobacco being limited, and I'm just curious as to what the reason was for the chewing tobacco to be added into the ordinance.
Having staff having to clean up that chewing tobacco off of walls and floors is a health hazard.
And the council also did pass a no smokeless tobacco, including chewing products, in parks. So we're kind of mirroring that as well. So if it's against code for city parks, we're also adding it to city facilities.
Councilor Baldwin.
I am not a smokeless tobacco user, so I don't have necessarily a bias in that direction. However, I would echo Councilmember Davis's concern in why we would add that. I feel like even in a park, if that is the code, I think that is a bit unusual. Like my dad uses smokeless chewing tobacco, whatever you want to call it, and you know, if he goes to the park, that would be a bit odd, I feel like, for enforcement. If somebody were to say, remove that out of your mouth at a park, I think that's a bit odd. It doesn't affect other people, and people who are going to spit on walls and spit all over garbage cans are also going to spit all kinds of nasty other things out of their mouths as well. So I don't know that I really agree that we need to add that part, but I agree with everything else.
Councilmember Davis.
Yeah, that was my concern, kind of along the same lines. If we're asking somebody not to smoke at the park because of the secondhand smoke that can affect the kids or the other people at the park, I'm not a chewing tobacco user either, but that seems like it would be somebody's personal preference that is not affecting other people. I do understand the case of if they're, you know, spitting on the sidewalk or in the public building. I feel like there would be another ordinance that would fall under than this. Because this seems to be more based around secondhand smoke from the way that it reads at the beginning. So that's kind of why I was, this was added into this ordinance per se. It doesn't seem to fit well.
Okay. Well, it sounds like everybody before it, if they remove the chewing tobacco aspect of it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right. Let's see. Go on next week's consent agenda.
Correct.
If this is, if that's mm-hmm. removed. Okay. Very good. Next discussion item will be regarding modifying paid parking at Allen York Park. Public Services Director Sullivan, the floor is yours.
All right. So I plan on, again, taking this in two parts. I think one part will be easier, the second part may be a little bit more challenging. So as we previously discussed, we are looking at establishing a season pass for Allen York Park through Park Mobile, so that somebody who didn't want to have to pay every time they went to the park would be able to simply buy a season pass, and that season pass would exempt them from having to pay each time they went to the park. It would not guarantee them a parking spot. There's no way to guarantee parking. So the ordinance would amend the code to specifically provide that at Allen York Park, an annual season pass shall be made available at a rate to be set by resolution of the council. The vehicle license plate associated with the season pass is exempt from this requirement. We did look into the license plate issue, and you know, I'll defer to Chuck for more detailed discussion. But under the reservation system, which is different than the Park Mobile General, the season pass would be tied to a specific license plate and is not transferable between license plates. So it is for a specific license plate and vehicle. The next thing on the agenda, I don't know if we need to have a discussion on, I can cover it here, is it's just the amendment to the fee resolution to set the annual pass at $50. Because we went to a fee resolution, I had to include the whole fee resolution. And if you go all the way to the very last page is where we add Allen York Park season pass, $50. So Just before I moved on to, I think, the more complicated issue, I just wanted to see if there was any council question on the season pass.
Councilmember Fullerton.
Jason, so we did discuss that for Bonnie Lake residents that we could do 50% discount. Would we be doing that? So it would be $50 a season for non-residents and then 25 for residents, or are we just going to keep it a flat $50 for everyone?
Due to the staffing that would be needed to verify residency for everybody, you know, for up to 6,000 households, the council's direction, we brought this back in April, was just to set a flat fee for everybody in the city.
Okay, because my thought was, like, because I have to go to the police department whenever I want to get my boating, or my boat launch permit. And then they let me know that I'm within city residents, and so they sell me a boat launch. Or we decided that would be too much.
Yeah, there's a little bit difference between the boat pass. One, that's a vehicle that is tied to an address. And we only sell about 200 of those, 200 to 300 of those a year. I'll let Mark jump in on the specific numbers. But with a Allen York parking pass, it would be anybody who lives in the city. We have about 6,000 households. And in talking and with the staffing, we would need another staff member brought on to help manage that. We don't have the capability to take on verifying residencies for that large of a population, which was what we discussed at the last meeting, and the direction was just to set it at a flat $50 for everybody for that reason.
Well, I think $50 is reasonable. That's 5 full days at the park if you were paying $10 a day. So the more you go, the less it costs.
Good on this one? Okay, so go to the consent agenda as well.
Well, we have one more element of this. I just wanted to split it into the second amendment that was being brought forward was dealing with how we deal with park rentals, field rentals, and paid parking. The original plan that was discussed in early April was to basically have a code that could be used 400 times, and you would get 400 codes per field, a code that could be used 400 times per field you rented. So if you rented all 5 fields, it could be used 2,000 times. As Chuck and my staff began to work on this with Park Mobile, we ran into a couple of challenges. One, when we proposed the idea, we thought we would be able to keep the reservation windows equal to their reservation on the field. So if they had a rental from 5 to 8 Monday through Friday, we could allow the pass to only be valid 5 to 8 Monday through Friday. In working with Park Mobile and their reservation system, that's not the case. It would basically be the entire time the park is open from Monday through Sunday for the entire reservation window. So they would have no parking from the time the park opened to the time the park closed, from the time they started their rental period through the end of the rental period. So if their rental period started on May 1st and ended on June 14th, the pass would create a no parking due for that entire time, basically the entire time the park's open. The second challenge is the individual getting the pass isn't actually charged, it's the city. So if we were to issue $2,000 codes and they got all used, the city would be billed $500. And so if you were to have 2 groups to do that, that would be $1,000 that we would have to pay. The second is if you were to we could create reservation windows in each window. So, you know, Monday 5 to 8, Tuesday 5 to 8, and a separate code for each of those reservation windows, it would be $500 per 400 codes for each of those reservation windows. In light of that, I contacted the mayor, knowing that Bonnie Lake Little League had the fields rented till May, the end of May, for their main baseball. We are currently not charging for paid parking out at Allen York Park. The meters are set to zero. To the council gives us direction on which way they would like us to go. What we are proposing in this ordinance is to basically change the date that we are doing paid parking from the Friday of Memorial Day weekend through Labor Day. This would remove Bonnie Lake Little League's main use of the fields. In talking, I had a meeting with Bonnie Lake Little League, their scheduler. For their main groups, they're really not using Allen York Park after Memorial Day, not necessarily due to paid parking, but due to the fact that they've had instances with grandma and grandpa have driven 2 hours to see grandson play, or granddaughter play baseball, and because the park is so busy, there's just no parking for them. So they've been moving their games after Memorial Day to other fields because of the dual demand on the limited parking. And then the other group is Mount Rainier Athletic Club, and they would not start. They typically don't start their field rentals till after Labor Day, so it would remove the paid parking from their kind of area as well. Memorial Day weekend through Labor Day weekend is our highest demand time for the fields. There is a small mistake in my memo. I thought we quit renting fields in mid-June. Currently, it's the 1st of July. So what we're proposing as an alternative to balance everything is that from Memorial Day weekend through Labor Day weekend, we would have paid parking and we would not rent the fields because we can't guarantee that there's actually enough parking for both. And then this year, the Bonnie Lake Little League has a challenger program that has about 35 to, I think, 60 participants. And we're going to work with them individually to figure out a solution for this year, and it may be the passes. We've got a couple of different things that we're working with them to make sure that that program goes off without a hitch. But in the future, what we would propose is that we would keep our field rentals outside of the peak park time because we're getting some conflicting issues with not enough parking for both to occur.
All right. Councilmember McClymans.
Yeah, I would request that we not put this on the consent agenda.
Okay. It's full council issues. Anybody else?
Does anybody have concerns with the proposal to just limit paid parking to Memorial Day to Labor Day?
I'm not seeing anybody. Okay. Good to go? Full council then. And the next item looks very similar, so I just want to confirm that this is actually a separate item. This shows this next item, amending the city's fee schedule to add Allen York Park paid parking season pass and repealing resolutions number 3187 and 3252. Is that correct, Mr. Sullivan?
Yes, since we went to a fee schedule, the code is being changed in one ordinance, and then we have a resolution where the actual amount of the season pass is being established at $50.
Okay. I have a question. So, Councilmember Fullerton.
So, just for clarification, discussion AB 25-34 is for the $50 season pass, and then discussion item AB 25-35. Is determining that the dates that we will be charging for parking is going to be from Memorial Day until after Labor Day?
No.
AB
34 would establish an Allen York Park season pass in the municipal code. It would also change the municipal code to say that we're only doing paid parking from the Friday of Memorial Day weekend through Labor Day. Those are changes to the code. Because we don't adopt our fees in code anymore, we adopt them by a fee resolution. AB 35 is the resolution that just sets the $50 fee, right? So in AB 34, when we make the code amendment, we're saying there is a season pass. The amount of the season pass to be set by the fee resolution. Then we have to amend the fee resolution in AB 2535 to actually set the $50 amount. So AB 35 just says adds Allen York Park season pass to the fee schedule with an amount of $50.
Okay.
Thank you. Councilmember Fullerton.
Clarification again. So we're wanting to bring this to full council. Are we bringing both Councilmember McClimates to full council, or are we just...
Why don't we bring 35 to full council and 34 can... I'm a little...
So 34 is basically...
I would prefer for the order to be different as well, right? Because first pass a law that says you have a... Yeah, so it's very, you know, that I understand the order and stuff. So I would be okay with 35 being full council and 34 being on the consent agenda.
So Councilmember Climbins, just to be clear, AB 34 is what actually establishes the season pass. AB 35 only sets the amount that's due when we sell one.
Right.
Sounds like they would have to be together.
Yeah.
So we need both of them to be together, essentially, to discuss both of them at the same time.
We need to go
same agenda, the same, so it'll be full council for both. Because we can't do one without the other.
You can do the ordinance, and then the resolution can fail, and then you wouldn't punish the citizens of Bonnie Lake with paid parking at the park.
Councilmember, go ahead.
Cancel the parking altogether.
So, are we good? Sorry to go back to AB 2534. I did a question did pop into my mind after we started the next discussion here, Bill. What about our park ambassadors? So if we're changing the date from Memorial Day to Labor Day, is that going to be the same time structure that we're going to add in these new park ambassadors and start counting our 250 maximum park attendance? Or is that going to be still set from May to October for the ambassadors?
The ambassadors are always scheduled to come in on Memorial Day.
Okay.
And to answer Council Member McClyman's question, if the resolution doesn't pass, then we have a season pass that's authorized without an amount, but the paid parking would still stay in effect for Labor Day to Memorial Day because the resolutions that are already in effect would stay in effect.
Gotcha. Councilmember Hubler.
Mine's more just a, I see some typos in the, on agenda packet, page 43, it's in the parking season pass and field rentals part. Down under, on page 43, in your bullet points, under on March 18th, there's one that says the city would not charge for this code, but a one-time transaction fee of 25 cents would be apply thought the park mobile event reservation system. So just cleaning up wording what that's supposed to actually say.
Yeah, it would be applied through. I'll fix that. I apologize.
No, it's okay. We all make typos.
All right. Thank you. All right. Anything else with that one? Okay. So that's full. Next item is regarding a motion to cancel City Council and Finance Committee meetings. City Clerk Shannon.
Just wanted to inform Council that there was a Scrivener's error on the AB. The date is actually June 24th, not July 24th. Not sure what happened there. This is Council traditionally cancels those meetings for the first day of the AWC conference. And in observation of National Night Against Crime, in order to allow the council members to participate in both events.
Any discussion on that? All good with that. Okay.
Perfect.
Next, regarding a motion to appoint three city council officials as voting delegates at the Association of Washington Cities annual conference.
I just need to have three people to be nominated and accept so I can add it to the motion for next week.
Well, yeah, so who's not going, I guess?
Yeah, we need three people who are actually going.
Councilmember McClyman's not going.
I am there.
You're going or not going?
Mm-hmm.
Going or you're going? Okay.
I am there.
Okay.
Sorry, I am there that day. Yes.
So.
Okay, so.
You'll have to attend the business meeting.
I'll nominate Deputy Mayor Swatman.
So we got Fullerton, Swatman, and Baldwin?
Correct.
Okay, I will add that for consent next week.
Ice cream.
We do get ice cream.
All right.
I'll sit by you.
All right. The next item is regarding amending the council policies and procedures. Deputy Mayor sure. Section to add mayor midterm vacancy procedures. And it's Councilmember Fullerton. The floor is yours.
So that policy, we did not have any procedures on nominating or appointing a mayor. So my thought was that we kind of need to have a procedure. We've never had that happen before. So went ahead and wrote out a policy that I thought would work based off of the RCWs that I had addressed before, as well as just policies of the deputy mayor's position and job title. Therefore, thinking that the deputy mayor should, since they're already doing the job of the mayor when the mayor is not present at the meetings, they're already accustomed to running the meetings and chairing the meetings, and the deputy mayor is also familiar with the whereabouts, the way the city's run, and all of the things that need to happen. I don't have that paperwork with me, so is it in here?
It's page 76.
Thank you.
75.
Okay, perfect.
75, right?
Yeah. I mean, I wrote it, but I'm just like trying to remember all of the things. So it was already that the mayor pro tem could not exceed 90 days if the mayor's gone. And so that remained. And then that vacated seat needs to be filled according to the law within 90 days of the mayor's absence. And I also recognize that many of the council members wanted to open up the position to other people. So therefore, the law states that an incumbent council member is eligible to be nominated and elected to the vacant position of mayor. So therefore, any council member that wants to be the mayor can elect themselves, or they can be, or nominate themselves, or they can be nominated by another council member if we decide that we want to open it up rather than give it to the deputy mayor. So it's just basically a procedure on how to fill a vacant position for the mayor. When the mayor's position becomes vacant during their term in office, the deputy mayor shall become mayor pro tem not to exceed 90 days. Then the vacated position of mayor shall be filled within 90 days. When a council person holding the position of deputy mayor therein holds the position of mayor pro tem, they shall retain all councilmatic rights to vote. So during that period, the mayor pro tem does not lose their councilmatic vote. That is also according to law. So anytime Deputy Mayor Swatman is acting mayor. He still is a council member. He's not elected. So he has the right to vote as a council member, even though he's running the meeting in the absence of the mayor. And therefore, the same goes if the mayor leaves office and the deputy mayor becomes mayor pro tem. He is not elected. He's not been appointed to that seat. Therefore, he does not lose his councilmatic rights to vote. The deputy mayor, as provided in RCW 31A.12.050 and RCW 42.12.070, may be nominated and elected to the position of mayor to finish the term of the vacated office of mayor. Also, RCW 42.12 stipulates that incumbent council members are eligible to be nominated and elected to the vacant position of mayor. All council members have the right to nominate themselves or other incumbent council members, and to vote for themselves or other incumbent council members for the position of mayor. This includes the mayor pro tem and other incumbent council members. No second is required for nomination of the mayor if only one nomination is made. No vote is required, and no nominee shall immediately be and the nominee shall immediately be sworn in as mayor. Because we didn't have any other nominations for the mayor position when we went through our whole nomination process, there was only one person nominated. Therefore, we never needed to vote for that because there was no other person nominated. So there was only one person. It came to my attention later that we did not have to go through that awkward moment where Deputy Mayor Carter had to vote for himself, that there never needed to be a vote because there was not a another nominee. So that's now in the policy so that it's understood. We don't have any more awkward situations. Further, it is in the best interest of the city to move quickly to fill the vacant position of mayor. RCW's 42.12.070 and 35A.12050 are silent to any other than current incumbent city council, city of Bonnie Lake council members to be eligible to fill the vacant position of mayor. Therefore, electing a current incumbent city council member to mayor will be the least disruptive and allow the council to continue with important city business. So that's how the changes were made to that policy.
Councilmember Baldwin.
Okay, so I'm sure some of you guys already know how I feel about some of this, so I'll just repeat myself. But thank you so much. I like a lot of this language in here, and you're right. We were all caught in a very odd situation, and so I really appreciate you attempting to rectify it. I think where I get a little bit caught up, and I do agree that the least disruptive move would be to, you know, do what is stated here. I think where it gives me pause is that there's a couple of thoughts that I have in mind, and I'm willing to agree with whatever the council wants to do if you disagree with me. But I think rush decisions in government to select the head of a city, that kind of concerns me. And I think that just because someone is in an elected position as a legislator, which is what we are, may not make a great executive. And so I really like the fact that when, I'll use Terry as an example, that when Terry became mayor, it was for certain that he was chosen as mayor because we didn't go through a rushed process. He was certainly selected, and so now there was no doubt that he was indeed the mayor, and he was selected as the mayor and chosen as the mayor. And so I also feel like I want the right person with the right fit. And I'm not even looking at, if we were to remove all of the people sitting here right now, right, and look into the future, I feel like we're doing right by the people if we do open it up. Because what we don't know is, and again, we could get people that come and they're just, that's, it's not a right fit, right? And then we move on and just say, okay, we need to select somebody from the current body, and things like that. But I feel like there could be people that come out from the community that would be excellent executives to work with the city. And maybe it's somebody that has been a council member in the past, or maybe it's somebody that, you know, is, would be a really great executive. And so I just, I feel like if we just say, nope, we're just going to select, you know, the people here, it's not really, to me, it's not really doing transparent governance with the citizens to show them, like, you know what, we're willing as a council to open it up to a larger body, and you have, because we're a democratic republic, you know, we are the elected body. They elected us to then choose wisely for them. That's essentially what we are as a American government. And so I don't know. I love everything else. I think that's the part where I just, I don't know how I feel about maybe that part, that little part.
Deputy Mayor Swatman.
Yes, thank you. So I don't read this as preventing a possible future council from deciding that they would want to go outside of the elected body that we have. You know, it doesn't prevent them from doing that, is my understanding.
Mm-hmm. No.
But it's highly recommended, because that's, to me, is the idea. These are council policies and procedures, and, you know, they're subject to change at any moment in time. The council could even kind of exempt themselves from areas of it when they want to do that kind of thing. The state laws are state laws, as stated very accurately there. But again, you know, it's very situational in time, kind of, it's very specific to what's happening and what's going on at that particular moment. The council that's in that time period needs to be able to kind of, well, what do we do? You know, this is, I don't know if we've ever had a mayor leave before, that I'm aware of, actually, so who knows. That's, you know, it's a very unusual occurrence, but we need some kind of a framework to say, oh, you know, hey, what is a good idea here? And I think, you know, that's a collaboration. The council member Ruth Fullerton and myself and Brock came up to some kind of a reasonable, like, okay, this is what we all can agree upon, because obviously I'm more tending towards what Councilmember Baldwin is liking, that, you know, we make sure to go out and ask the people. But again, you know, that is all situational to me, because I think if, you know, we were having to do this council body a couple months before elections or whatever, you'd have a whole different kind of scenario, or, you know, it's really time sensitive. So, you know, this gives you a good framework. I'm willing to go with whatever, you know, Councilmember Baldwin recommended here. It doesn't prevent the future council from doing any other different activities. So it's like, yeah, okay, I'm okay with what it is. I'll go whether it matters.
Councilmember Fullerton, thank you.
So just a few points is that we have a deputy mayor that we appoint, and the deputy mayor's actual job title is to run the council, to chair council when the mayor is gone. They're also working closely with the mayor pretty much during the week as well, creating the agenda and creating what the council wants to be put on the agenda. So deputy mayor's already working with the council to create our meetings, because these are our meetings, and is already doing the job of the mayor. When we had our mayor quit on us, we literally lost 6 weeks of council meetings. We lost a workshop. We had to cancel a workshop, which we have never, ever rescheduled that workshop. So our two and three, now three new council members have lost out on the ability to have a workshop so that they can get familiar with city staff, get familiar with policy, work on, when we did our workshop before, which was 4 years ago now, we went through the budget and we were trying to figure out what items we wanted to put on our future agendas. It also disrupted a budget year. That was in the middle of a budget year. Council member or Deputy Mayor Carter at the time was already familiar with what we were discussing as far as the budget goes, and where we were headed with our budget, trying to balance our budget, trying to give all of the staff the ability to balance their budgets and come up with the items that they wanted to put on their, what are those issues that Sherry brings to us?
Decision cards.
Yeah. So we're in the middle of having our decision cards handed to us, and then we literally lost 6 weeks because we not only had to do 3 weeks of interview process because we couldn't make a decision of replacing the mayor. That was not productive in any way, and it destroyed the fabric of the council. It created a huge division within the council, and so it was not productive, and it was very, very disruptive. And then when we didn't choose somebody from the community, there were actually people who felt like we wasted their time. They put it on social media that we wasted their time, that we had never intended to give anybody the position other than Deputy Mayor Carter. So there was actually comments on our social media that we wasted people's times. We had them come here. We had them fill out a 6-page interview process. We interviewed them. We called them. We also took our time. So I don't feel like I wasted their time, you know, but we spent a lot of time interviewing these people and trying to be respectful of their time and trying to be respectful of their qualifications. But in my mind, why do we have a deputy mayor? Because that's literally like having a vice president. We have a president of the United States that we elect, and we elect the vice president as well. And if something happens to the president, then the vice president becomes the president of the United States. And that is the same thing. We're just a smaller version of the government. We're the legislative branch. It's just simply creating a policy that allows for us to replace the mayor should anything happen to our mayor again. God forbid, you know, but, and, you know, I thought I had in here because I think it's might be up somewhere else, but I mean, we can add in there that we want, if there's nobody that wants the position, if the deputy mayor says, nope, I don't want to be mayor, and none of the council members want to be the mayor, then obviously we're going to have to open it up. But if we don't have to, and we have people that were trusted by our citizens, by our constituents, they trusted us to make decisions. They put us here to make policy and to make laws or ordinances, and they elected us to do this job. Deputy Mayor Carter was elected by the people as a council member. He was completely qualified, and, you know, and he has more than showed his capabilities and the fact that he was ready for the job. He accepted it and he was prepared. He'd already been doing the position anyway as deputy mayor. And if something happens to Mayor Carter, then Deputy Mayor Swatman has been already doing the job. He works with the mayor, you know, at least once a week with, you know, they have their discussions and they have their meetings. And so it just makes sense to me that we have a vice president or a deputy mayor who we elected because we trusted Deputy Mayor Swatman to do the job of deputy mayor, and that is his position. And his qualifications and his job description is to take the position of the mayor. Deputy mayor presides at meetings, and the count of the council administers oaths and signs instruments in the absence of the mayor. When the deputy mayor presides over a council meeting, they shall retain their councilmatic vote. I mean, that's part of the original policy. So, and it's not, yeah, and I don't have anything there saying we can't. It just says specifically that it's the least disruptive to allow the council to continue with important city business. And I, for one, felt like the whole entire process was a complete fiasco. And it was an insult, and I just felt like we lost out on everything. We lost our workshop. The city clerk had to cancel the meeting place that we had set up. She had to cancel the catering. We lost money because we couldn't get our money back. We had to put a deposit down for the catering for food so we could eat during our thing. Plus, we had to take, you know, several months just to get all of the staff to and the council members to send in the dates that they were available to have that workshop, and then it never happened, and we still haven't had a workshop. So we have three new council members now that have never experienced a workshop where we sit down and we can discuss city policy and create city policy, figure out where we want to go for the future, what we're going to be planning for. Do we want to have a veterans memorial? Do we want to have a community center? You know, what do we want to do with Midtown? All of those things got swept under the rug, and they've never been brought up again. And to me, we lost an entire year because of that disruption. So,
Councilmember Baldwin.
I hear everything that you're saying, and I don't think I viewed the experience maybe the same. And I think losing 6 weeks over making sure that the right person is in the mayor position is of the utmost importance. I know that you've compared it to like presidency versus vice president, but like the president chooses the vice president. Like in this scenario, it's not necessarily the same situation and scenario. And so I think that we got lucky that somebody came in that can work with the staff, that is, you know, not falling apart, has vision for the city, and somebody is in the position right now that makes an excellent executive. But just because someone is in deputy mayor position does not mean they're going to make a good executive. And I think that's, I mean, looking back kind of just, you know, at the history, as I look back, you know, if you just throw somebody in and they're the deputy mayor and they become the mayor, they could be somebody that doesn't get along with the staff, or somebody that is really demanding or has no vision for the city. And, you know, I would hate to have placed somebody like that into the mayor position just because, you know, it was going to save us money and weeks. I really feel like you have to have the right person in there. And sometimes that may mean that it's not within the space. And I understand that Councilmember Swatman, you had said that there's nothing in it that prevents it, but the information is indeed withheld, though, from the document. Like, it doesn't have that as an option either.
Yeah, that was our compromise. Well, we tried. Well, I at least, you know, I obviously prefer what you're talking about, but in making this proposal up, it was the compromise that we could get to.
I mean, I think if we are talking about making sure that the council is well informed, why would we withhold information in a document with the potential options?
That's how legislation is made.
That might be the problem.
Yeah, I know, right?
Compromise.
And so I think, like, in the future, and again, I am telling you guys, we got really lucky. This was a very good, and you know, if there's people saying things on social media about it, and I don't think it's every person that came, but if there's a few people doing that, it's like, okay, well, they thought we wasted their time, but in essence, we know that we didn't. And so I don't want to allow that kind of emotional response to something that I'm seeing that someone's saying on social media to then affect something I'm making decision-wise for a city. And so you know, I can understand if everybody was saying something about it, but I doubt it. It's always like the one or two that say something on social media because they didn't wait 48 hours to think before they posted something. And so I can back this up and agree with it more if there was something that also said that the council has the choice to, or the council reserves the right to also have this other option. Because I really think if you withhold information, I don't think that's right. I think if we want council to be able to make a choice in the future, they should be able to see what the options are. Because we went through it. It's not common. And we went through it, and we know what the pros and cons were. I mean, Gwendolyn just listed a lot of the cons. There was a lot of cons. And so the only reason why she knows those things is because we literally just went through it. We know what the holes were. And so as a council, since we do, I think that we should do right by a future council by not withholding information and options and saying what those options are, and then let that council decide what they want to do.
Is there an easy way to add to that last sentence that it could be workable between differences of opinions?
Sounds like a great last sentence. I do like that. Before we go any further, I saw Councilmember Hubler's had her hand up for a little bit. So
oh, I'm so sorry, Carrie.
No, Angela, I love listening to you talk. So, Deputy Mayor Swatman, can you make sure you bring the microphone closer to you when you talk? Because through the microphone, we can't hear you.
Sorry.
And you have important
Thank
things
you.
To say.
Thank you. Yes. Can't hear what you're saying.
Excellent. We were trying to get to a point where we could possibly, I don't know if it would be if agreeable to add some language there that would be agreeable to everyone.
Councilmember McClinens?
Yeah, I would be agreeable to add some sort of language in there, because if my memory serves me, which it doesn't all the time, in the, is that, yes, this was a very difficult process, mainly because there was nothing that addressed it in the code. And I remember that there was a motion to appoint the deputy mayor, and that the council voted to make the process public. And we did wind up with a candidate and with a selection, and it did take work. And I think it did work out well. I think the biggest thing about that is, I think it would be nice to, I think one of the things that I think I would like reinforced is, the big thing I see out of this is, if there is an existing person serving on council, familiar with city business, that wants to step into that role, it should be clear that that is an advantage to the city, right? Now, the council doesn't have to. The council can always vote, like they did last time, to make it a public search. Because I do understand what Councilmember Baldwin's saying, is that, you know, we have a lot of talent in the city, right? And we would hate to turn that talent down. It's always, I don't see there any way not making this a difficult problem, because it is. So don't make it a difficult problem, Mr. Mayor. Right? By doing it, just serve your term and let the people vote for you. Maybe can we pass a law that says a mayor cannot resign? I don't know. Anyway, so I think there might be some additional words, maybe embellish the document to make it clear that the optimal selection is somebody familiar with the current business and somebody who's capable, and that the council can always do that, right? And just like last time, we could have done that because there were no rules, but we didn't. We chose to make it a public process, which I don't think public processes are bad, but they just cost money. Yeah. They take time, and you're going to wind up in a public process, which means it's not going to be comfortable for people. And you know what? There's an advantage to that. If you put yourself in a position of serving the public, you should understand that you will be punished for that, right? No way about it. People are going to point out all your faults and all your failures in every way. You're going to get emails about how wonderful you are, and you'll get pseudonyms assigned to you. But so then don't put yourself into a public role. Don't nominate yourself. Don't accept a nomination. Don't run for office. If you do this, it's not, I don't know if anybody here who has not been through that, right? So there you go. That's I don't think that can be avoided, is what I'm trying to say. So I think it'd be okay to add a sentence in there. I guess I'd want to understand why we wouldn't add a sentence in there, reminding councils that while it may be an advantage to select, to consider and select an existing legislator that has been duly elected to hold that seat, the council always has the possibility of making it public, right?
So I would just like to say thank you to Councilmember Fullerton,
yes,
Swatman, and Councilmember Rock for working through this process to come up with something, which I think is a good layout of, you know, giving us a plan. I think it's important to remember what we've just gone through. So you did that so you can, you know, use that for the future. And then as you're doing that, to remove the name tags, because it could be somebody, you know, completely different, new council or whatnot. So when you're thinking about that, you know, what does that do for the future? Not necessarily for us, but for future councils. So I think you've done a good job of that, and thank you for that. I think adding a sentence on there sounds like great. I really loved your sentence there, by the way. So thank you for that. I do see that Councilmember Hubler has her hand up, and I wanted to get her, but I had to throw that out there.
Sorry, guys. So I agree with adding the sentence in there that the council, you know, has that option to open it up. But just a couple of the things kind of reading through here, there's some wording. There was one that says, oh gosh, sorry guys, I totally lost where I was at.
No second is required for nomination of the mayor.
That's it. So it says mayor of or something like that. And then one of the when I'm reading through it, there are several times where it says nominated and elected, may be a nominated elected to the position of mayor to finish the term. Are those words, just to clarify, are those words that are used in the RCW? Because for us as council, we would be appointing someone as a council member or a mayor. So I want to make sure that, is that what the RCW says, or is that just wording? Because we aren't electing them, we're appointing them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if I have a copy of the actual RCW anymore. I was just trying to kind of rewrite a sentence or add a sentence. Let me see here. Looking through my notes.
Councilmember Baldwin, which like tendency on the sentence do you want to go with, right? That's because I can see, you know, I can see one being added to the end there where it's, you know, something to the effect of unique circumstances or timelines may necessitate the council to open up public
to,
or whatever it is, you know, some kind of wording like that, right?
I think I want the council to know that they have the ability to choose differently if they need to.
Sure.
Well, what if it is like, should no one be nominated or choose to accept the appointment, then council can reach out to the public.
But I think if even one person is appointed, but let's say a council doesn't actually want that person, right? Like, let's say I nominated you, and then the way that it's worded, it says, okay, no vote is needed, you're now the mayor, right? As a council, I would have issues with that. And so I think, yeah, I think it just needs to be something to the effect of, like, councils can reserve the right to open up a mayor vacancy to the public rather than drawing from the legislative elected body or something to that nature.
Councilmember Davis.
Yeah, I did kind of like how Councilmember Klein has put it. So something in there along the lines of, while the preferred choice would be within the council does retain the right to open it up to the public.
There you go. Yeah, that.
What do you say?
Yeah. Yeah, because you do want the council to know that that would be the smoothest proposition. Yeah.
So, oh, Councilmember McClymans.
Yeah, so again, I think the reality that I came to through this process of mayors is distinctly different from a council member. Yeah. And so the selection process for replacing a mayor may be different. And I think one of the biggest differences there is that's a position where you can, as you know, you can recognize that somebody knows the current pending business and the capacity. Like, we understood Councilmember Carter's capability when that went forward. So that's why either process, I was super comfortable with either process. Because what if the council just felt like, yeah, okay, they accepted the motion to appoint him mayor immediately, that would have been fine by me, because I had full confidence in Councilmember Carter, because he had been serving as deputy mayor. As Councilmember Fulton pointed out, we have that understanding. So that's the difference in this process versus council member process, is that council already has working relationship and an understanding of capability. The public will never have that. I think we can agree to that, having been served on council and understand how things work. They won't. People who have not been through that will not understand that advantage. And I think that's the value of alliterating that in the handbook and saying, hey, it's good to choose from the organization because this position does require a certain amount of information. But the council, in any of these circumstances, for any reason, can open it up to the public, right? And that's okay too, because I was okay with that passing, because I knew that Councilmember Carter was an excellent candidate, right? And it always came back to the council again anyway to make that decision. So, you know, the real thing is the concerns I think it's great to have anything in the code, and if I understand it correctly, you know, the council can do what they want to do regardless of what we write down here. What's important is that we write something down and give a council a starting point to think about, since we started with nothing, and that was we did get lucky.
We did.
So I agree.
Yeah.
Councilmember Baldwin.
I just want to reiterate, too, I think one of kind of my driving thoughts on this in, you know, not looking at the current situation, but looking at potential situations that could occur, that I imagining, you know, that there's somebody in the deputy mayor's seat, and I can, you know, place multiple people in that seat, right? And think about, like, just through time, and think about, okay, if that person had been selected as the deputy mayor, okay, now that person's going to become the mayor, and that person would not do a good job being in charge of people in the city, and would not be a great leader, and might actually upset, you know, the people, the staff, you know, and not cause unification and have good vision. And so that's my biggest concern. I want a council to be able to reserve the right based on the scenario and the situation. So that's all I have to say.
Councilmember Fullerton.
So RCW 35A.12.050, it does say an incumbent council member is eligible to be appointed to fill a vacancy. So that was correct on Councilmember Hubler's point. So that needs to be changed. Instead of elected, it should say appointed.
So the last sentence we'll read. Do we have language for that?
Councilor Davis, you had great language for that, wasn't it?
Should have wrote it down. That would have been a smart idea.
Council does retain.
I think we have natural language processing.
I actually have down optimal selection would be a current council member, but the council reserves the right to open up vacancy recruitment to the public.
Did I mention it's the clerk's?
She's a good clerk, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so with that change, we move forward, essentially, and with the spelling changes also noted. Spelling slash wording changes.
Thank you for all the work you guys put into that.
That's a big win, thanks.
Yeah, better than an empty space.
So with the changes, consent. Are you okay with that? With changes?
Yep,
okay. All right, last item, amending the council policies and procedures for council vacancies, section to update procedures. Deputy Mayor Swamman.
Thank you. So this is one that we wanted to brush up to, that we noted some inconsistencies in the way we did things in the policy that we had written down previously with council selection. So this has a suggested language changes on your page 78 in your packet, likely, as mainly the only thing we changed in there was the interview and application procedure. Because it previously stated that that you may interview all or some of the eligible candidates. You know, the wording there is one of the suggested was we make it will interview all or the eligible candidates. You know, that's kind of quasi a little grayish wording, but it gives you more of the direction to, you know, that you need to interview all of the eligible candidates, I guess, is what they were talking about. Plus or minus, because you know the eligibility is what you're describing with the council's procedures anyways. And the other one, the main change down there is, of course, the big contentious area in this one is the fact that, you know, my preference is to allow the councils to interview the candidates as robustly as possible. I really disdain the process where we only have to answer, you know, our forced to ask the same type of question to every council member, because I don't think at that particular time and process in the council candidate, right? Yeah, very good. It's appropriate for, that's the public piece where literally when you're a council member trying to pick another council member to join you on the council, you're trying to, you know, demonstrate their worthiness or why they should or shouldn't be on the council. So things can come up in that interview process amongst council candidates that may not be the same, because you're looking for, in my mind, a council member that you're going to have to spend the next possible 2 years with or 1 month. Just all depends. So clarification questions is what we kind of settled on in there. Was council member Fullerton's that we could get to. She always points to that, and she's like, well, you can ask a clarifying question. It's like, okay, well, we just wanted to kind of like try to open it up in there, and then, you know, each candidate should be allowed 2 minutes for closing comments or whatever, but this is, you know, it's just a starting spot, so it's kind of what we were noticing when we went through there, because we had some, you know, issues with outside the council chambers, inside the council chambers, all that kind of stuff. Kind of even that all out.
So weird.
Make it work. This virtual environment was really strange for us. So, there you go.
All right. Councilmember Fullerton.
Yeah, my thinking on clarification, clarifying questions are allowed are also allowed. I think that can create a new direction. So you're still asking the same question of all of the candidates because there was something having to do with diversity that you had to ask, you know, so that you're not asking somebody a different question and kind of singling out people. So you ask that similar question, but then the interviewee, when they answer that question, that allows you to go down a different path. So they are creating a path for themselves by us allowing each other to ask a clarifying question. And it says clarifying questions are allowed. So then that allows you some more time to interview, but also it gives you different avenues and it can take a turn and, you know, twists and turns, mm-hmm. and you can dig a little bit deeper into getting those answers that you're looking for on who you feel is best qualified. So I thought that was at least a good avenue to. Mm-hmm.
Councilmember Davis.
Just a clarifying question about the clarifying questions. would you be allowed to ask clarifying questions of other council members' question or only your own?
Again, I think this is a guide for what you start out with. Mm-hmm. This is like one of those things. It's a draft template. You know, it's kind of like, okay, a council member left. What do we do? You know, you have to think of these future councils. They're like, what do we do? And we'll look at the council policy procedures, start there and say, okay, this looks like this is what we're supposed to do, clarifying questions, you know. And if you were a council member then, you'd be saying, okay, but I want to make sure that we understand this is the process we're going to use, you know, could we ask another question or whatever, you know. It's just a place to start. So, you know, the council has to work with what they can, and it's a draft guideline.
Councilmember Hubler.
I love the wording. I do agree with Councilmember Davis on that. Like, can we ask other clarifying questions? Because I remember during the first round, when we first were going into where Councilmember Davis's seat is, there were times that somebody would ask a question, a person would answer it, and I would be like, oh, I have a question on that now. But we couldn't ask them a question. So being able to ask a clarifying question on somebody else's question would or could be helpful as well.
Okay. Councilmember Fullerton.
Yeah, and I know that Councilmember Baldwin had made a comment. She was like, I want to ask a clarifying question.
I did.
What you just said. Because I was like, oh, I don't have any questions.
I was like, wait.
So I think maybe if we put in there, you know, time allowing, then if there's any further clarifying questions, because we're really allowing the person that's being interviewed to kind of create their own interview. So they're personalizing their own interview by their answers. And, you know,
so could we ask that?
Yeah, so we could maybe time permitting, because I know we have like 15 minutes or something per applicant. So we do have to make sure that everybody gets to ask their question, and then maybe we can, you know, time permitting, put, you know, further clarifying questions can be asked.
Mm-hmm. Councilmember McClymans.
Can we add some language to the front of this that would say the following procedure should be discussed and ratified by the council previous to posting the announcement? Because I would really like to see the council look at and say, yeah, this is what we agree we're going to do, which would include what the notice looks like, what the standard questions are, and whether or not we're going to allow that. I think by just putting that in there, saying, this is what we're going to do, please ratify it, or we can have a discussion like we're having right now then, and or that council, probably, maybe not all of us, but can say, oh, no, let's tweak it this way or that way. So I think that makes them make the decision.
Mm-hmm. Councilor Baldwin.
Love the wording on this. This is really going to smooth up the process for sure.
I think the where I have pause is, and you had already mentioned it, which is kind of funny, but it's the word eligible. And so yeah. My question is, what qualifies as eligible? Why are we adding the word eligible? And I feel like this is subject and open to interpretation of what eligible means. So, like, what are we talking as eligible?
One of them was that they
okay.
There's an entire list when I send out the candidacy paperwork.
Okay.
Oh, and I post it. There's a list that they have to meet in order to be eligible.
Okay. Okay.
Because some of the, you know, my nuance is to kind of sometimes state law changes around things. Mm. So eligibility at that point in time could be different than it is today.
Yeah.
I don't recall if they've removed the felon thing or not, but at one point you couldn't be an elected official because of a felony.
Right.
I forget. Yeah. I think they actually removed that.
What?
You have to live within the city of Bonnie Lake for so many months prior, and
1 year.
1 year.
I don't know. Washington
year
State.
Yeah. How they do. Yeah. Crazy. Councilmember McClymans, do you have something?
No, I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Very good. Okay. Well, it sounds like if we add those, then
yeah,
it sounds like a good skill.
Great. Wonderful.
Sure, the clerk is on top of it.
The clarifying questions for McClymans, it's always brought to the workshop. I always ask what the dates are that you want me to post. Those questions are not standard questions. Those are just suggested questions. Those aren't even questions that even have to be asked. They're just suggestions.
We're allowed to write our own question. Most of us did
something.
Write our own.
Yeah. I think so, too.
Yeah. So those aren't even standard questions. So normally what happens is I say there's an opening and I give suggested dates. Let's post this date. Let's go for this long. Let's do interviews on this date. That's usually what happens.
Yep.
I've been through it a lot lately.
You go through it a few times. Councilmember Fullerton.
So just for clarification, are we going to add to that like at the very end where it says each candidate will be allowed, well, we probably want to do it before that. So after clarifying questions are also allowed, period, then put time permitting should council have clarifying questions on other council members' questions, and then the candidate will have 2 minutes to close. Something like that.
That'd be fine.
Gotcha. Got me?
Got it.
Mm-hmm. I was trying to figure out where to put it and how it was going to be worded or what we were going to say. Okay.
Right on. Okay. Anything further on that? Okay.
So productive.
Right?
Yeah.
So there's no executive or closed session. See, no more business. We are adjourned.
Wow. All that. We're done by 8.
8:01.
That's a lot.
You didn't have public safety in there.
Councilmember Baldwin, I do appreciate your all of your things. So I know I get kind of passionate, right? But yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, I know. I like to hear everyone's opinions, so I do appreciate your opinions. So I just want you to be aware of that. I don't want
it.